Mag Tutter Interview, Tape 1, at his home in Jakin, Georgia.
Well, I guess, first of all, how did you, since it is kind of a lost art, how did you get into doing it? How did you learn to do it?
Well, really, I've done it ever since childhood. It's been a God-given gift. I've just done ever since I was back in school
here. Did you have an older relative or somebody that taught you how? You just started doing it?
No, I just picked it up. I've always, I reckon I let my imagination run away with me. Back in the 60s, I made I'm a mechanic, and I made a figurine set that moved. Mm-hmm. And I've got a little bit of it on a VHS tape that came off of old 8mm film. Mm-hmm. But it was a man chopping wood, mm-hmm. cow eating out of the mm-hmm. trough, and old lady rocking in a chair on a porch, and different things like that that I knew that I could make it work mechanically. Mm-hmm. And if I retire, I want to get in something more in depth on it. Mm-hmm. Maybe on a 4x8 sheet of plywood and have the controls coming up through the bottom and have things moving on it. Mm-hmm. But it's like I say, you can only go as far as your imagination will let you go. If you don't have imagination, then you can't do any of it. Mm-hmm. That's like the candle sitting over there. That's
Santa Claus?
That's a cypress knee. That's cypress knee. And lady down here that made a mold, mm-hmm. and she sells those candles. So that's a candle made from a cypress knee. The mold was made from a cypress knee mm-hmm. of Santa Claus. Mm-hmm. But
so where do you get your ideas for the things that you do?
It just comes to my head. Mm-hmm. Now, I do have, there's sometimes people, because you know that most of my stuff is shoes and boots and stuff
right.
like that.
And they're mostly, you do miniatures.
I have had, and I've got some pictures of a man from Fort Bragg, North Carolina, bringing me an old pair of worn-out jungle boots that had the green cloth on the side, mm-hmm. and they were worn out. And he wanted to know if I could make a pair like that in miniature. Mm-hmm. And of course, I took a picture, the old pair behind it, and a little pair in front mm-hmm. of it, and exactly. But of course, she mixed the paint. To really, but most of my shoes and all, I use various stains and all on it, and of course I have. I enjoy making some figurines. I don't hold on to my figurines very long. I hold on to shoes a whole lot longer.
Why shoes?
Well, everybody wears shoes, and shoes has character. People runs them over. Or they are turned in, they're pigeon-toed, just different styles of shoes. I've got some, I've had a lot of requests for old-type shoes with the buckles.
Right.
Or buttons, and I've got some pictures, and I get to looking at them, and I say, well, I change this way, I change it that way. And this spring, I guess I'll start making some of those, because it's seem like everywhere I go, we had a festival up at Peachtree City, and people asked me about it. So I said, well, all I know to do is just go back and try.
Right.
But I never know what kind of shoes I'm going to make. I'll start working on them. And when I get down to basically the bottom or down from the lacing and all to the top of the shoe there. I said, well, I want that shoe to have a cap on it, or do I want a crown on it, or do I want a solid, or just a plain shoe, or mm-hmm. of what? Mm-hmm. Then usually if I make a pair, if I do that, then I got to go back and I got to make that other one exactly. And whenever you almost get through with it, there's a stress crack in it, you just throw it away and start over. But I guess one of the biggest reasons I do shoes is it's challenging. Mm-hmm. Very, very challenging. I got some cowboy boots over there that I got the spurs. They're cut on them. Mm-hmm. They're not made on. In other words, I took a block of wood and I cut that cowboy boot out. And the spur is still on the boot. So that's a challenge right there, because if you got that grain at an angle, either way, or straight up and down, that spur would break off. Mm-hmm. But the grain of the wood is horizontal and that spur is on there.
Is that why you do miniatures?
Right.
As well?
Because right. Well, I use a lot of poplar, the wood poplar, mm-hmm. because of the fine consistency of the grain, it'll show detail better. I know when I started out doing something with pine, and you get to see the pine grain in it, and it'd take away from the what I'm trying to show. Mm-hmm. So I just got away from pine. I don't do any in pine anymore. Like I say, I do most of it. I have made some out of ash. I think I got a pair in there out of ash. Mm-hmm. That is very, very hard. It's like baseball bat, but it's a very hard wood, especially after it's cured out. But it's a close grain, and it'll show detail good.
So what's your process when you decide to start?
I'll get to thinking about, now, what am I going to make? Do I want to make a low-cut shoe? Do I want to make a high-top work boot? I want to make a cowboy boot? What do I want to make? And then I get down with a piece of paper, and I'll start sort of drawing it out until I get it exactly the way I want it. Well, although I've got it exactly the way I want it, I'll try to leave it a little bit oversized where I can come back to it when I start carving. But what I'll do, I'll cut that out. I'll pick me out a choice of wood that I want to make. And then I'll go and I'll cut that wood out. Take that, just draw it out on it, and make me a blank to start from. Mm-hmm. In other words, naturally, I'm not going to take a knife, take a 2x4, and just start cutting it down mm-hmm. to, you know. So that is my process. So what I'll usually do, I'll cut that out of that paper, and I'll make me a pattern. I'll probably make, well, I don't never make 7, I don't never make 9. And if I'm going to make them in pairs, I try to make either a 6, 8, or 10.
Right.
And then I'll start working on them. Well, all of those shoes although I made a pattern, all of those shoes, whenever I get through cutting them down, they may not be alike. Mm-hmm. It's like I say, some may have a crown on them, some may have a cap on them, mm-hmm. Or just whatever. But they'll still be basically the same width, the same height, and depth, everything, length. But they'll just be a different shoe. But they'll be in pairs. In other words, it'll be two of a kind. On each one, it'll be two of a kind. Just about as exact as you can get it. And these shoes, they're strictly collectibles. You know, when you deal with the Franklin Mint or wherever, they sell collectibles, but they'll make 15,000 and break the mold. But mm-hmm. each one of these is a single. Mm-hmm. And that's why, as we was talking about before, it's a dying art. In other words, people just don't. You don't find many. I've been accused of being from Stuart, Virginia, Melbourne, Florida, someplace out in Arkansas. So I know that it's a few more people that does this stuff.
Is that part of the reason that you go to the shows?
I enjoy it. I enjoy the fellowship that I have with people, and I meet people from everywhere. I even went to a show and met a gentleman from Ontario, Canada. He was a wood carver. Of course, I'm a member of the National Wood Carvers Convention, and we communicated, and he sent me some patterns of sailors that he worked on and right. all, you know. But I've done, it's no telling how many shows since we really got back in it, and probably about 90 or 91. Mm-hmm. But we've been to some small shows, and we've been to some good shows, some large shows. And I'm just waiting until I can retire from that paper mill out there where I can go all the time.
Do you worry about the longevity of wood carving? Do you worry about younger people taking it up? Have you thought about taking on a tutor?
I try to encourage. Mm-hmm. I've been, in fact, I was asked in Tallahassee to teach wood carving down there to some. It's hard for me to try to teach something that was a gift to me. The way I look at it was a gift to me. Now, if you have the ability, if you have a little bit, if you work with it, you can develop it. I know, I think it was a couple of years ago, a man from Indiana, of course, he had some shoes, and I know he had just started. Mm-hmm. They were crude. Very crude. But man, I encouraged him. I told him what a good job, and because you need encouragement. I don't care what you do or where you need that encouragement. Right. And I encouraged him, and I told him, you know, what a good job and all that was doing. And that's a process. I look back. I've sold. It's people as collectors that's got a good many of my shoes. A lady in Thomasville, Fallon Barbecue down there, Mary Fallon, she's got, it's no telling how many pairs. But I told her last year, I told her, I said, Mary, I said, I'd be ashamed, the first shoes that you bought, I'd be ashamed of. She said, no, Mac, I love them. But I believe that wood carving, anything else, is a process of learning. If you don't get no better, you better quit it. Mm-hmm. It's just like if you had a sewing machine, you couldn't learn how to sew on it, you better get rid of it. But I feel the same way. And I believe that today, I can look back. In fact, I think I got some in there that I try to keep hid back. But shoes that I made a long time ago that I thought was detailed, they still think, but they were not detailed. They were not detailed to the point of where I detail them today. I make shoes that if it's got a cap on it, it'll be higher than the other. Then the side panels, they'll be higher. So it'll be just like a shoe where you have leather on leather. Mm-hmm. And the stitching that I can put in these things, it makes them look just miniature, just like a real shoe. Mm-hmm. A lot of safety shoes. Of course, safety shoes is a thing that I hadn't been able to hold on to too much because a lot of the industry requires safety shoes now, so people associate a steel toe that is showing through the boot. And I make them with a steel toe showing through, and people wonder, well, how in the world did you get that in there like that? But it's just, in other words, again, that's imagination. Mm-hmm. And I tried two or three different things before I settled on Coke can. Mm-hmm. There's a little piece of Coke can in there. But I tried liquid solder, I tried plastic steel, I tried this and that and other, and it never would work. All you could, far from here, the television set over there, you know, you could see it and it looked all right. But when you got it up here, it didn't look right. Mm-hmm. And I was not satisfied. I may have there that's left. I know I had, of course, I sold a lot last fall at our shows. And my inventory is down.
Had you done any of Jakin? Did I remember?
Yes. You know, in the museum and in the library down there, up on the top shelf, as you go in on the right hand side, mm-hmm. I believe it's Mosley's store. It might have been Mr. Crookman's store or whatever. But I got a storefront and got it all fixed up, and I just donated it to where the community to have something after I'm gone.
Right. What made you decide to do that? I sold several, but I wanted the
town to have something after I left of how it used to be years ago, and that's what now Benny, your uncle, he wanted me to make I believe it's the post office that he buy on.
The old post office?
Yeah, the old post office, the way it used to be years ago. But I hadn't. I just don't have time. I'm not being tied up at work and everything else like that.
What do you think about the, because that's something that interests me, is the renovation that they did and when they had the centennial.
I think it looks very nice down there, man. And I just... It looks a whole lot better than what it used to look. Whenever you had your old brick walls falling and everything laying out there and all, they did a good job. But in that same frame of mind, I'd say that we need to preserve the way it used to look. Mm-hmm. And if we can preserve it through storefronts and the library and all, I mean, You got some old pictures, some old documents and all in there. That is that's real nice, and I made your storefront of the post office, Mosley store, Crook store, Mr. Ike Bibbins, Mr. J.W. Miller's old store, and what I wish I could do one day. I've still got some old frames that I can put together that I had taken from pictures. What I did, I took pictures, old pictures, and I measured those pictures the best I could to try to get it to scale. In other words, if the top, if from the ground up on that picture was 1 1/4 inches, and say the length of it was 2 inches or 2 1/4 inches, then I tried to keep that scale as I went up with it, and it's just a process really of trial and error. You certainly wouldn't want to try to build this storefront, build it out of wood, and then come to find out, well, hey man, this thing here don't even really resemble size wise. So you want to do it first on poster board. I did it on poster. That's the way I do it.
Right.
I do it on poster board because that's the best way for me. And then when I'm satisfied with it, then I go with it. But it's just a ongoing learning experience on all of that for me today. Mm-hmm. When you get to the point where you say, well, I know it all, you're just a mess. You're in a mess. Just like the work I've been doing over there. Started out in the Navy. Did the same thing back in 55, and I'm doing the same thing, and I learn every week.
Something new.
So it's a process.
What about your walking sticks?
Well, the walking sticks is, I tell you what, I got one left. Like I say, I got one that took Texas last year that it had a wind spirit, old man carved into the top of it, and right below it had a sailor with a white hat, and it was two or three more figurines carved down on. But the way I did that, I do a lot of walking over here on a dirt road, and it was some sweet, not sweet gum, China bear limbs.
Oh, really?
And it didn't have any leaves on it, so I started working with it. And the last figurine that I carved on that thing was about 8 months later after it had dried good, and it was almost like concrete. It was so hard. But it came out real good. I got some pictures of it. A lot of stuff like that. I'll save pictures, mm-hmm. and I look back on them. I got into carving golf balls.
Huh.
I'm not a golfer, so I didn't know. But a woman from Savannah, Georgia. She told me, she says, I know your ability and I know you can do it. She said, you can carve a face in a golf ball in an hour's time. I said, well, I never have tried. But we was at a show in Tifton, not Tifton, but Moultrie, Calico. And she left me one of those, and she says, I'm gonna come back later and check. It took me just about 30 minutes. To carve that face in a golf ball. We got some pictures here where they got a picture of a pharmacist in Albany, Georgia, that his wife wanted to give him one of them mounted. I mount them on a little old tee and a little mm-hmm. patch of green. And she wanted to give them to him for Christmas. I took that picture and looked at his face, and I carved a face on that golf ball that it just duplicated that picture. And of course, naturally, something that you're really fond over or proud that you did. You know, I like to make pictures of it. Mm-hmm. But I enjoy doing those golf balls. Thing about it, those range balls, they got a solid core in them, and there's a good bit to get in them. I mean, you know, to try to peel half of that cover off. But things have been real good for me. I've really done good with my, so the Lord's really blessed me.
What do you think is part of the, because it seems like you find that it is popular and people are interested in it. Do you think it's that it reminds them of the past, or that it's more valuable than?
I believe, and I'm not knocking Walmart, I'm not knocking Kmart or anywhere else, but you know, you can go back in the sections there and get stuff that's made by prison labor in China. And people get that really, that will not support, you know, because they say, it's just like I tell them I'm not working for prison labor yet in Jenkins, but I may one day. But, you know, it's a lot of people that want it. And there's some people that don't never question it. Mm-hmm. But I believe it'd be some people that would question it if you give it to them. That's just the way people are.
Mm-hmm.
But, I believe people are very interested in it. I really do. I believe people are very interested in it. I got a pair of shoes right now, a small pair, that a woman from Eufaula, before Christmas, gave me a $30 deposit on. And I hadn't heard one word from her since then. But I still got them stuck back.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, those little miniature shoes, I sell them anywhere for $25 a pair. I think my most expensive pair that I've ever had was $80.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get $80, that's a lot of detail, a lot of work. And you're talking about a week's work.
Right. Do you think maybe that's why, do you find when you go to your woodworker conventions or your shows. Is it older people that are doing the carving, or are there young
mostly,
people involved?
Mostly.
Do you think now it's the time some, put into it that yeah, would deter right, younger people from doing that?
Well, you see so many young people say, I don't have the patience to do that. And I'm quite sure when I was younger, I didn't either, because I got away from it. Mm-hmm. I got away from it, and then I came back to it. But I came back to it after I got older.
Right.
And but I never forgot it. I never forgot it, and I always thought about it. Well, I said, well, I'm going to do this, but I never did get around to it, especially when you're raising your family. You never do get around to it, you're trying to make a living and all, you know. But it's
a calling.
It's a calling, yeah, yeah. I would definitely say it's a calling. Everybody can't do it, but I believe the people that has the desire and has the urge to do some of it, then you can expand.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not Tom Wolfe. Tom Wolfe is one of the greatest woodcarvers, and some of these others, but I enjoy what I'm doing. I never have seen him do anything like I'm doing. He's always did funny looking characters and all that stuff, you know, cowboys. And, but it's people that's it's people that needs encouragement. I know it's people behind me that is starting out that needs encouragement, and that's what I say. I'll try to encourage him. Man, that's a good job there. And although deep down I may not feel, well, it's a good job to me, it's a good job for him. I mean, you know, it's, that's just like saying sick him, you know. I mean, that's just sort of gets the adrenaline going, say, well, somebody is proud of me. Somebody thinks I'm doing all right.
And it seems the way things are today, it's not encouraged.
Right. That's just like if we were, I mean, the man that approached me in Tallahassee about giving a wood carving instruction to his kids and all, if it's not, if they have no desire to do it, I'm reminded my nephew right over here, Ed Mosley, you remember Gene and Bill Mosley, and, you know, Anna and Ed. I remember when Ed got out of high school, Bill and Gene, they were going to send him to college. He didn't want to go to college, but he sure did spend up mom and dad's money for a couple of years, different college, and then he got out and did exactly what he wanted to do. So I'm just saying, if you have people, if you want to do something, if you have that desire to paint, to be a wood carver, work with clay sculpture. Now, I want to try to ease out into that just a little bit. But if you have that desire, you can go. Mm-hmm. But if you have that, if you don't have that desire, you're just pushing yourself for nothing. It's just like that piano over there. people that has, my wife's got a brother that, of course, he's blind, but man, he'd tear that thing up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where he's coming from, you know. But he's got that desire to play that thing. He knows that instrument. That's just like when it comes to wood carving tools or whatever, I feel like that I know my instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And God gives us each different talents, different, you know, gifts and all. And I feel like this is one that he's truly gave me, and I thank him for it. I thank him for it every day. I know I run into a lot of things at some of these shows. People say, well, I would, yeah, they look at that stuff and just start, and they say, well, I wish I had a gift. I said, do you love somebody? Well, sure. I said, Scripture says, Apostle Paul said, that's the greatest gift of all, love. you show that love to somebody. Well, I reckon you're right. So maybe some of the things that I see at these shows and these meetings like that, that, you know, maybe it gets out. That's just about me, the way I do things.
You want to tell me about some of your things in your case over here?
I'll show you some of the. That was just an old figurine head there that I made. It just really nothing. I took a few minutes and done that.
Who was it supposed to be?
Just old car driver or something, you know, somebody. But now there's a pair of jump boots, army jump boots, and as you can see, you got your leather on leather, like I was talking about, leather on leather, and all
and
of these
the
stitches.
Soles detailed.
How
do you do the laces? Because you've actually got those stitched
Those are laced up just like your shoe is laced up. Those are done. I use mostly about a number 40 drill bit, which is very small. And then I lace them up. I use craft thread. Mm-hmm. And that right there is just a old pair of low-cut shoes right there. And there's
kind of like Oxford saddle shoes.
Mm-hmm. And like I was talking about before, there's people that run the shoes over.
And so you make the crease marks like they've been worn.
But if you look at those are pigeon-toed.
Mm-hmm.
But shoes has character.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll run them over to the side and in different ways. Now here's a pair of shoes here that people ask me, say, well, so they look so worn out on top, what about the bottom?
So you have holes in the bottom.
Yeah, holes in the sole. And you can see your cleat marks and all on the sole of it. It's just done worn out in those places there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just a character of that type of shoe. Like I say, my inventory is way down right now. Here's a pair here that I was talking about. One of the pairs.
Mm-hmm.
That's old cowboy boots, and you can tell that they've been wet, they've been worn, and they've been formed by the rider.
Yeah.
Old bowlegged. But you can see right there that the spurs are made onto them.
Mm-hmm.
Those spurs won't come off. I guess you could take a hammer and knock them off, but as far as the wood splitting off and them coming off, they wouldn't come off. Now that right there is probably my best pair that I have right now, or the pair that I'm more thankful for right now. But I've made that's my fourth pair like that. Of course, the others are gone. But
and you stay mostly with the natural stain.
Yeah,
rather than
of the stuff. Now here's your safety
shoe. Oh, I see. Yeah.
So you see what I'm talking about. Now I could have filled that in with some of the other stuff and plastic, steel, or plastic, aluminum, or whatever, and they would have looked all right back over there on top of the television set. Mm-hmm. But when you got them off like this, you could tell that it was not a slick metal in there.
Mm-hmm.
But this pair right here is made out of ash. Mm-hmm. I was telling you that it's some.
It's harder.
It's very, very hard. Very hard. And those are made from ash, and I got one more pair that's made from ash. You see that these are just a pair of rope of boots that don't have the spurs on them.
Mm-hmm.
And they are, of course, it's hard. That wood there is very, very hard. But what you're holding right there is. It's no more like it in the world. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, it's like I say, when you talk about collectibles, that's a single right there. Mm-hmm. That's no more like it. Okay. Here's a pair that that's just a pair of regular old cowboy boots with spurs that after I stain them, I put a little sealer on them where they'll show up a little bit better. But I really don't like those as much as I like a pair like this down here. But I believe, again, that is your growing process of anything that you do like that. That you see the stuff that you do better. Of course, that was just some old cowboy boots. But I have got, like I say, I've had a lot of requests for baby shoes.
Mm-hmm.
I've got some pictures of
the snake that you did out of the tree root. Is that a new thing that you...
Yes, I did. I did that this past year. That tree root. And I understand you're going to Valdosta, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, it came from over in that area. It came in between Douglas and Waycross.
Mm-hmm.
Out of some new ground over there they planted some blueberry trees. And really, that thing looked like a snake before I started working on it. But I took him, and of course, I fixed the tail on up on him, and I tapered him down going up to his head, and then I got the wide head on him and put the scales on him, just like, you know, a snake has scales. And then Orita spent about 7-8 hours in there on that table painting him one day. But she mixed up that paint. She found a picture of a rattlesnake, and she mixed up that paint to try to. And we've had some fun with that snake.
Yeah, I thought it was real.
Yeah, we've had a lot of fun with him. The first time I showed him was in Tifton last year. And it was people from ABAC, but it was a woman up there. Boy, she had a natural fit about that snake. And I told her, I said, that's a tree root. She says, I see that root in that. I says, I'm talking about a snake. And then I just carved a little wood rat out of a poplar. Put in there with him, named him the Prey and the Predator. And I had the thing made downtown here. A little plate. Of course, I've won a good many blue ribbons and all, first place ribbon. I enjoy showing my goods as much as selling them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I remember one time, I've got a picture of it over here. I made a old cavalryman, a hole in a rifle, and had his old suspenders and everything, old hat. I worked and worked and worked on that thing, and I got through with it on Tuesday night. Wednesday night, a fella saw it, and he says, would you sell that? I said, well, I said, I hadn't gave it any thought. I said, I may. He says, how much would you have to have for it? I said, $125. So he just gave it to me, and he took it. And I said, from that day on, I'd never do anything like that. I'm not going to put that much work in something and then let it go. I put the price up high enough that I'll keep it for a while, you know, and look at it, and then I'll let it go. But when you put a lot of time in something like that, you'd rather keep it around for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like I say, I have a good many pictures. If you want to get some copies of them, whatever, you know, if it'd help you,
okay.
It'd be.
All
right. That's entirely up to you.
Can you tell me about your shoe from 1951?
Okay.
Back
in 1951, I guess it was, I made this shoe, and I went to school here in Jakin. And my childhood sweetheart, she was a year under me in school in Blakely. I went with her for a good while, and I broke up. But I made this little old shoe at that time, and I gave to her. After I broke up, I went in the Navy after I got out of service. After I got out of school, and I stayed in for 14 years. Stayed in service for 14 years. But after that first 4 years, I realized that, now, where in the world is she at? You get to thinking back, get a little bit of sense in your head. So whenever I came back, of course, she was gone. Then in 1989, I heard from her again. And of course, she was, her sister lived in Albany, and she had came back to Albany because her sister's husband was dying with cancer, and her sister worked with Walden Kirkland. So she more or less sat with her brother-in-law until he died. But anyway, we got back together. We got married in November 91, and she still had this little shoe that she'd kept in Texas all these years. She stayed out in Texas and raised her family. Her family was grown, and my family, they were grown. So we got married in November 1991, and we just have a great marriage, and I got my childhood sweetheart and my shoe back. So that's why you saw it up on top of it there. It's NFS, not for sale. We share that a lot of times at these places that we go in. And there's people that's actually left there crying, you know. But it's just how things works, you know, a lot of times. The way it's meant to be. Right. That's the way it's meant to be. That's the way we accept it. Of course, I know you don't have to put this on there, but I know that, you know, we're real involved with church, and we sang in church together.
I was also going to ask you about you're in a gospel quartet well, right?
Right, right?
Is that another? Because, you know, I remember my grandfather would go to the all
right.
night sings.
All night sings, right?
We were talking about the all night.
No.
All right.
Okay.
Talking about the old gospel sings.
Yeah, we of course, just like the quartets. Also, I was in one years ago, and then we got out '71, 1971, and then we got started back here about. Probably been about 3 years ago now, but we enjoy that. We don't go off anywhere. We done got too old to go off there. Paul. Older you get, you know, you want to be home by sundown.
Mm-hmm.
But we enjoy that. We go to a lot of nursing homes, and of course we go to a lot of churches too. But we go to a lot of nursing homes, and it's a blessing. It's a blessing for me to go, because you would be surprised. I know there's people. I know we went to one over in Bainbridge here. It's been about 3 weeks ago. And then they begged us, please come back tomorrow. I said, we can't come back tomorrow. We'll come back next Saturday, you know. Those people are in a helpless situation. And the way I feel it, you know, if it's any way in the world that they can get a blessing out of something that I say or something that I do, I just give God the praise and honor. But we enjoy it. And of course, now you talk about the all-night sings. Now, Bonifay is the big all-night sing. That's one closest to the 4th of July every year. And ever since 1991, I guess, we've been going.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll spend the night. We'll come back home here. Of course, they're usually about 4 o'clock in the morning. They're through, and we come back home. We get home about 5:30 or 6, and lay down in there. We'll set that alarm clock for 9 o'clock, and we'll get up and we'll be in Sunday school and church.
Yeah.
we like to lay around that Sunday afternoon.
Is that something that, is it like the ones that you remember going to when you were younger?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
What kind of things do they have there? Because
it just don't seem like, it's not as many people that as used to go. So I think a lot of things, and not only in wood carving, but a lot of other things is changing a lot. Mm-hmm. And it's not always for the better either. But I reckon we have to accept a lot of things as the way it is.
Do you see younger people coming back to it?
Now we had a gospel music channel on satellite, and, mm-hmm. and I see a lot of younger people, but they're on up in the Carolinas and Tennessee and all. Now, and down here, you do see at Bonifay on that Saturday night, you do see a good many young people. There's a lot of young adults too that's involved. And of course, that's the night that it's hot weather, and that's the night they wear the witness shirt, you know, with Jesus and the cross or whatever, you know. And it's just a good night of fellowship and singing and all. I remember one year we went down there and sung at the, they had one of them talent things. That was back in the days where we had to have a bus and had to have this and that and other, and had old double-decker bus. And of course, that's just, I reckon that's the first thing when you're young you think of.
Mm-hmm.
I know we was at a craft show down at Climax down at Swine Time.
Mm-hmm.
And Florida Melody Boys from out of Monticello, Florida was there. And those boys, they had a very, very good sound, and I believe, but they were all real young, and they were on an old bus.
Mm-hmm.
And they said as soon as they left there, they were going to Mobile, Alabama, because they had to sing there on Sunday. As old as I am, it would have broke down on me before I got to Bainbridge. I just wouldn't have had any. But they were young. Mm-hmm. It just didn't seem like it
mattered.
That's right. So as you get older, a lot of things change. It just.
Do you find the ones that you went to when you were younger, was it more of a local community type gathering? Was it more like a social gathering?
Now
they're, what did they used to be like?
Well, now a lot of times, now a long time ago, whenever we used to sing, we'd go to these homecomings.
Mm-hmm. Church homecomings?
Homecomings, outside. I mean, you know, they'd have old fence wire, mm-hmm. spread out under the oak trees and the tablecloths on that fence wire, and they'd have everything just...
Dinner on the ground?
Yeah, dinner on the ground. And, of course, Emory Corson, Emory used to sing with us back then, and I'd claim that he'd go down as far as he'd go with that big old plate, and he'd mark his spot on the ground, that way he'd know where to pick up. But we used to have some good times. And I'm not saying that you don't anymore, but most places now, they have a fellowship hall, which is good,
mm-hmm.
but it's not as many people there, I don't believe. Most of the places that we go to now, and I just feel like that God's not changing. I just believe that people is changing. Of course, I know that change is good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's some diehard people say no, it's not. But if change wasn't good, I'd be out there. I'd be going to work on a back of a mule, you know. But change is good to a certain degree. But
if you see that something is lacking, what is the something? If it's not change, what do you think that it is?
Well, We have discussed that a good bit too. There's a lot of people that they don't love Southern gospel, they love contemporary, which is good. Man, any way in the world you can spread the gospel, spread it. But then there's some people that's in Southern gospel. They say, oh, I don't even want to listen to that old junk. Or people that's contemporary said, I don't want to listen to that junk. And that's where your change is. I feel like that's where your change is. And that's a good change. That's a good change. I don't get all carried away over contemporary music, but I try to listen to the words of it. Not to the notes, but to the words. And if I listen to the words of it, I'm going to get a blessing out of it. And I think that's what it is. It's a lot of times that people want to they don't want to participate in this or participate in that because, well, I don't like that. But a lot of them haven't even tried it. They don't know if they'll like it or not.
You think it's all about the individual instead of the community?
Well, you know, you talk about individual in the community. I've got a neighbor right here. I see him every now and then. Mm-hmm. But I remember when I was coming up, we didn't have television. We didn't have the pressures on us to make a living that we have, the kind of pressure that we have today. And we'd go over to our neighbors, we'd spend time with them, we'd fellowship with them. So I think the community has changed. But it's changed because of the individuals in that community. Mm-hmm. That's just like our government. If our government says it's going to be on account of us. Mm-hmm. I mean, per se, you know, in other words, the country itself. But that's why you have everything. That right there has taken a lot of
the television.
Yeah, a lot of the time that we used to spend with our neighbors. It used to be nothing to go and borrow a cup of sugar, a cup of flour. Now, some of them never brought it back, mm-hmm. but then again, there's some that brought it back twofold. But you didn't throw brickbats at them because they didn't bring it back.
Right.
You had a community there that was built up of those individuals, like I'm talking about, that they cared. But now, and it's not only that, you get out on the road, you have road rage. Mm-hmm. People kill you out there on that road. I know when me and Orita, when we're getting ready to go to Texas, of course, we'd go down here and we'd hit I-10 and boogity boogity. Go to Beaumont, hit 105 and go up through, and of course, her kids live up at College Station up where Texas A&M, mm-hmm. the Aggies.
Yes.
And of course, I try to wear me a FSU t-shirt when I go out there because they don't like that. But you can't. I tell you what, you get on the road, you don't. People are crazy.
Some of what you do with the quartet, and I know that I think about this, that mm-hmm. that they've cleaned up Jake, and that you know mm-hmm. Blakely did the same mm-hmm. thing with their downtown, and they had that music on the square. Do you think that's a to get back away from the television and back to a sense community?
Right. I believe that some of them are, and I believe that is a good effort. It's a good effort. I know we've sung down here at the gazebo before.
Mm-hmm. And you find that people want that.
Right.
They seek it out.
Right.
Is that what you found?
Yeah. You know, a lot of people are hunting things right now. They're hunting God, but they're hunting Him in so many different ways. But I believe that the only way that they're going to find God is go back to the old ways, go back on the knees and really, and of course, I know you got that thing right, but that's just like this Bill Clinton thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking about politics, but I am saying, if we call ourselves Christians, and don't forgive him. Mm-hmm. You may as well take Matthew, the 6th chapter, out of the Bible. Because the model prayer Jesus says in verse 14 of chapter 6 there, that if we don't forgive, our Heavenly Father ain't going to forgive us. So I don't know. And of course, he's just as wrong as any wrong there's ever been. But he has asked forgiveness. And if I don't, it's something wrong. Mm-hmm. It's something wrong with my life. That's just like if somebody right. If I do somebody wrong or somebody does me wrong and I don't forgive them, then I'm in the wrong. But, you know, people don't do that anymore. You know, I know Jerry Fowler, Jerry Clower, he said a thing one time, had one of them old tapes of his going, and he was talking about some deacon at a church, and somebody needed to go down and help him. And somebody said, well, says, I tell you what, says, I got to find out what he's done before I help him. He said, well, let's go down and stone him then. What's your way to do it, you know? And I think that's people are stoning you a whole lot quicker to help you now.
Yeah.
But of course I know this, but that's the way I feel about that. And I feel like that singing, when a quartet sings, or when a trio sings, or when an individual sings, gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ, that is a 3-minute sermon. And there's people that'll be touched by a 3-minute sermon that won't go to that church out there. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a fellow, Bud Blakely, right now. He's singing today. But when he got saved, I says, Chain Gang Johnny. Because he'd been dope. Everything, he'd been on the gang. Last June, we went and heard him. And me and Emory were sitting there. And he said, there's two people right back here. He said, Brother Mike and Brother Emory. He said, they had an influence on me when I was a child. But see, his mom and daddy followed us around singing. And then later he came, when he got as low as he could go, he got right.
Mm-hmm.
And then he came back. But you never know what kind of an influence you're having on somebody. And he'll stand up in a big church today and testify to the point that what an impact that we had on his life. And I just say, praise God. I just, nothing that we did, it was just what God did through us. And that's the way I look at it, the way I have to look at it. We practice every Tuesday night. Every Tuesday night we practice, whether we going anywhere that weekend or not. And because I think that's what it's all about. If you're gonna praise God, you need to do it best you can.
Mm-hmm.
But I love quartet music. I love the sermons, the 3-minute sermons. And there's some great songs out right now that people like Bill Cross has written, Kirk Talley. It's just some dynamic messages out there. I know that I have a burden for my children that I want them in church. I don't know. It's tough sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk to that youngest boy. Now, that youngest boy, he comes over here all the time, him and his kids. Just tell me, I know it needs to be in church, Daddy. I know it. But you see, this same thing may happen to them that happened to me. When I was in service, of course, I was away from home. I did just about everything anybody do. Mm-hmm. I think that's just pretty well natural. There's some that'll say they don't, and some that'll say they did. But anyway, when I'd come home on leave, I'd hear a good old joke that I heard on board ship. I'd say something to my daddy about it. He said, son, I said, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. But I had great plans that when I retired out of service, I'd come back home here and me and Daddy go fishing. We'd do this, we'd do that. But then in April of 1967, God had other plans for my daddy. And whenever he died, I accepted the Lord. I turned everything over to the Lord right then. And that may be what mine does. Of course, you know, I don't know. But,
And do you feel like your carving and your quartet is an extension of that?
Oh, yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, if it wasn't, I don't know. I believe that if it wasn't an extension of that, well, a lot of people don't have a purpose. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people right now that's over there that mill that they talk about retiring, but they say, what am I going to retire for? I don't have nothing to do. I've got plenty to do. If it's God's will, then I'm going to do it when I get out of there. Mm-hmm. Because I want to go to places like Eureka Springs, Arkansas. That's about 30 miles from Branson, Missouri. Dog Patch up there. They got wood carving conventions. I just want to just get back and sop it all up, you know. And I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do it. Now, Rita's my wife's daughter. Lives in Fort Smith, Arkansas. She's some kind of chairman of the state foundation board of Medicare or something for Arkansas. So she travels all the time. We'll go up there. We've gone up there before to Eureka Springs. Of course, that's where Christ is on the mountain. I think it's about 70 or 80 foot tall, and he got his arms. That's where the Great Passion Play is at Eureka Springs. I want to do stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I have no desire to go to Los Angeles. I have no desire to go to New York. I've been to those places. They hold nothing for me. Really, what holds a lot for me is to be able to walk through the woods, pick me out something that I can look at something that say, well, I make a walking stick out of this, or I can make this out of that, or something, you know, just. And that's where my life is. It's not in Los Angeles or New York. No. I just like the stuff of old. Mm-hmm. I reckon you'd say the stuff of old. Folklore.
Which what you do, like with the golf balls, bring
right.
it into the
right.
the new, to share.
Right. Absolutely. Yep. Because I've said so many times, I said, those shoes, that's a challenge to make. But it is a blessing. It is a blessing for me to be able to go to these shows and show it and talk to people. I may say one thing that would make a difference in their life. If it did, it'd be worth it all. It'd be worth it all. It's just, I know we've talked about it before at church. I said, that pastor, he may be up before 150 people on Sunday. But Saturday, I might have had over 100,000 come by me. Now, they didn't all stop. The thing about it, those that did stop, did I make a difference in their life? Mm-hmm. But I enjoy it, boy. I tell you what, it's just good to be able to do it. Good that God has let me do this, the way I feel about it. But that's about it.